Thank you all for tuning in to Politics, Religion, and Whiskey, the Josh Terry Podcast, brought to you by Raising Grace Studios. Thank you to Nobles Networking here in Cochran, Georgia. Hit them up for some internet today. Red Circle for putting a little change in my pocket, and all the other sponsors on the show. You guys are awesome. Today we have got something that's really special today. We've got some people who have dealt with substance abuse in the past and now teach recovery. I guess is that the right way you would say it?
It is.
Tell them about your organization real fast, the name of it, and then you know, give them y'all's names.
The organization that we have is called Crossroads Recovery Ministries. My name is Brad Sapp, and basically what we do is come alongside guys who have struggled with addiction in the past, but pretty much any hang-up, and teach them how to stay clean, walk out a life of recovery and sobriety, and ultimately let God be enough to learn from their mistakes and be the men that they were created to be.
I love it. And you are his wife, correct?
Yes, I'm Jody Sapp. I'm Brad's wife. Together we started the ministry in 2015, and so we've gotten to see just recovery and freedom from addiction play out over and over, and it's been pretty cool.
This is one of the episodes, our top episodes, absolutely love doing. Mm-hmm. We play around a lot here, and we have too much fun sometimes. But I say it over and over again that I hope one day I got enough money or I'm in this right position in life to where I can be an activist and help people. Mm. So I very much admire what y'all are doing. I have a sister who has been in and out of rehab since, I don't know, she's 6 years younger than me, probably the past 8 years. But the past 3 years, she's been a house mother and has decided pretty much never to come back to our hometown, which I think is a very good idea for her. And now she's helping kids and helping young women. And I would have never thought 8 years ago when her struggle began that she would be where she is now. So I love being around folks like y'all because it saved my sister's life.
Awesome.
So how did you – I guess we need to start with y'all's backstory first before we get into the program. Kind of tell them, you know, y'all's journey.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll just start with kind of our background as a couple. So we're high school sweethearts, so we've been together a long time. and since 1996. And so we both grew up in the same small town, not too far from here. We're both from Wilkinson County. So we grew up there, always knew each other, and we were high school sweethearts. Like I said, it started in 1996. And then we got married in 2002. And so we're coming up on 19 years this summer. And there was definitely a time along our journey that I wasn't sure we would make it to this point. But God's been so faithful to us all the way through. And so we got married in 2002. And I guess we bumped up against addiction for the first time in 2004. And so it wasn't very long, which has sometimes give me a complex wondering if I'm the reason that this began, but I know that's not true. I've been in it long enough to know that's not true. But yeah, so I'll kind of let Brad pick up the story from there and how it kind of started rolling for him.
Yeah. I mean, throughout high school and stuff, I was always heavily involved in sports primarily. Didn't really struggle with anything at a young age. But when I was 21, my dad, growing up in Wilkinson County, McIntyre to be exact,
I was not from McIntyre, I was from Gordon.
Yeah,
I live.
That's important.
Isn't Danville right around there?
Danville's
not. I lived there for the past 2 years.
Okay,
so yeah. I know what you're talking about
in Wilkinson County. So, but my dad owned a heating and air company in Gordon. Did heating and air my whole life. When I was 21, I was at Georgia College in Milledgeville, living the college life. Doing what we do, thinking that I had the rest of my life to essentially grow up, figure out what I wanted to do. When I got a phone call that there was an accident and I needed to run to go to the hospital. When I got to the hospital, my dad was laying on a hospital bed and he had suffered third-degree burns pretty much over his entire body. They were putting in a system and some glue caught on fire, and through trying to put it out, he fell into the hole where the fire was coming from and was burnt. And 5 days later, he died in the Augusta Burn Center. And my life was turned upside down literally overnight. What I've learned since is that in that moment, I became a hard-hearted kid that was angry at God. I was pissed because I had lost my dad, but I had no idea how to tell anyone that. I didn't know how to say, I'm sad, this hurts. I was very much a, we're men, we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and we go on about our business. To complicate things even more, I grew up in the church. But it was mostly a hellfire and damnation type of messages that I heard, and a Southern Baptist, you know. And in my mind, it's like, well, I can never read that Bible enough or learn enough about it or be a good enough Christian. And playing sports and doing everything I had done, if I'm not going to be great at it, I'm not even going to try it.
Yeah.
So I felt like I could never be good enough. So why even try? And God was, he was always angry at me, throwing lightning bolts down, judging, you know, just that I could never perform enough to earn his love. And that's what I thought in my mind, because playing sports, how far I can hit a baseball is how hard I can hit somebody on the football field. That's earns love or respect from people.
You get validation back for it right away.
Exactly. From my performance.
Yeah.
So I felt like I could never be a good performer for God, because I can never learn enough about the Bible, and certainly
too many rules to follow.
Too flawed inside. I'd never be a preacher, or you know, that was always for other people. And then when I lost my dad, and you know, nobody's perfect, but my dad lived that Bible to the best of my knowledge that I saw growing up. You know, he didn't cuss and drink. He was a modest man that ran a heating and air company and provided for his family, and was, you know, did a lot for the community. So you combine that with fire and burning and the hurt that comes from that, man, I was pissed for a long time.
Well, and he couldn't, it's always interesting to me that growing up in church, going to a Christian school, always being around it, but yet he'd never heard of the loving side of God.
Yeah, see, that was
and the grace.
The first time I got saved was because I was scared of hell.
Yeah.
The second time I got saved was because I figured out God's love.
Right.
Right, exactly.
I think most of us in this Bible belt.
when that dude came to our church, I remember I was like in seventh grade, and he was preaching that hellfire and brimstone stuff, and I was like, I don't want to burn for eternity.
Right.
Like, I didn't.
Yeah.
I don't like that. Like, that's one of the things that I get why people do it.
Yeah.
But I feel like you're not supposed to, not that you're not supposed to teach it.
Right.
But show God's love and let that what brings
you. Yeah, you teach it in a healthy way. Whereas most of we get fear-based religion so much, because I was the same way. I'd go down front and get saved just to keep from going to this hell that y'all keep talking about. You know?
But for him, I think, so never hearing God's love and then seeing his dad, who was his hero, this good man, right? And he was physically burned the way the bad people in hell burn, right? And he could not reconcile it. Like, that's why his heart became so hard, because he could not, you know, make it work.
Yeah.
A loving God that would do this.
One of those guys that tries to make sense of everything, you know, like, how is this going to work out one day? How is this going to make sense? And I couldn't. Knew from a young age that is what led me down alcohol and drugs. And I knew from a young age that pain pills did more for me than just take away the pain. I'd get hurt in football or have accidents, and they did way more than just do what they were prescribed to do. They actually made me feel great. So it wasn't long after Daddy died that I turned to alcohol and pills to numb the pain that I was feeling inside.
We had a legitimate injury first.
Yeah, I ended up tearing my ACL. I was dabbling in pills and alcohol and stuff, like most stories, you know, on the weekends. And then I can remember never touching one from a Monday through Friday. Then you take one on a Wednesday. And then before you know it, it's like most things in life, it's a slow fade. And we turn around and I'm doing them all day, every day. That coupled with I tore my ACL playing arena flag football, and they sent me home with a sheet of pain pills. You take this many this day, this many the next and stuff. And Jody came home and that whole sheet was gone in about a day. And that's when it was kind of like, you got a problem.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I do. But like most
because
people.
Because he was so functional. That was the thing with him. I was blindsided because I had no idea. Because, I mean, we were young. We were in our early 20s. Everybody drank, right? Yeah. I mean, like, everybody socially drank at least. And so, and he was so functional. He didn't miss work. He didn't miss church. Anything I asked him to do, he did. All those kinds of things. And so people often say that functional addicts are the worst kind because nothing happens, right, that makes them, they don't get to their bottom really quick. And so that was definitely the case.
And that's one of the things that kept me stuck, because as human beings, you know, we compare ourselves to other people way more than we should. So I'm looking at other people and thinking, well, you've got a problem, but I don't, because I'm still doing this, this, and this. But I'm only holding myself back because I'm comparing myself to other people. You know, and it doesn't matter what they're doing. It's you individually. So when they came to me and said, well, you took this many pills or where are they at and stuff, I've always been that guy too, where I would admit that I had a problem. You know, I'd say, yeah, you know.
Always. He'd pack up and go somewhere in a heartbeat. Like, you'd be so proud. I mean, like, he was always sorry.
And, you know, but it was to the point where I knew what I was doing was, quote unquote, wrong and how I was raised or what have you, but I had no idea how to stop once things got started. So once cornered and caught, I would buck for a little bit to start out with, and like most other stories too, the first time it's, oh, well, I'll quit on my own. Mm-hmm. Then I'll go to a detox and I'll get out and be fine. Then I'll do the detox in the 30 days and then the IOP, which is intensive outpatient. Like, I tried all of that stuff. Fast forward.
10 years. Yeah, it was in and out of programs, yeah. Outpatient detox.
Yeah. So it was between 12 and 15 years that drugs had me. Mm-hmm. Drugs and alcohol. Between, you know, half a dozen trips to detoxes and 30-day programs here, there, leading up until 2013, when she had finally had enough. And that's one of the things that I want people to hear, man, is the fact that, you know, coming here and talking to you, which I was excited about and stuff, but I always say that her story is better than mine.
That's what he told me yesterday.
Because really? She
stayed. That's what he told me yesterday.
She stayed, man. You know, and without her, there's no us, obviously.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, she loved me enough to tell me I'm done. And when I say she said it and she meant it, I knew she did. And part of me was almost like, good for you, Jody.
Yeah.
You know, good for you.
I believe that tough love that you give somebody, yeah, is the best tool. Absolutely. To use in almost anything. Absolutely.
Yeah. I tell wives that all the time when I'm counseling with them, that, like, you know, listen, you have a little bit of power. Yeah. In this situation, you can give them a consequence.
That was the same thing with my mother and my sister. Mm. Was I just quit having anything to do with them, but I would still let them know I care. I cared, but I'm not going out of my way for you. I'm not giving you any money. You know, I'm not going to be the reason. If I have to get that call one day that you're in a ditch somewhere and not breathing, it's not going to be because I enabled it.
Right.
Right. Yeah, you know, you've done everything you can do, and then you have to put up boundaries, you know, to protect yourself.
So we haven't done it in a while, but first couple months that we were here, and it's just because we've been so busy we haven't done it, we're going to start it again soon, is on Wednesday nights we do this meeting here. And it's not recorded or anything like that. It's called the Still Riding Meetings, and it's for people who have dealt with suicide. I'm a survivor of it. Mm-hmm. And we just have people in here talking and building a support system for each other. And one thing that I am not, a lot of people think I'm not very well educated, and it's because I'm not. but I have read a lot of articles on mental health and addiction and other things, wanting to help people. And let me tell you, the knowing that you're not alone is probably the biggest one. But I lost my train of thought, but it was something that you just said with the meetings.
Either tough love or somebody through offering, I mean, a community and meetings and stuff is one of the biggest things that we offer too when it comes to.
Well, and we've got to take away the stigma.
Yeah, that's what I was getting through is asking for help is, I don't think you said something earlier, and I talk about it a lot, that men, especially where we're raised, we're not supposed to cry. We're not supposed to let our emotions out. We're supposed to always hold everything together. And I don't believe in none of that. Mm-hmm. I don't. Mm-mm. And the fact that y'all are changing the stigma around it, and there's a lot of people in this area that are trying to, with mental health, addiction, and stuff, to look at it a different way to where, you know what, don't be ashamed.
Yeah.
You messed up. Yeah. You messed up. Now let's get it right. Let's fix it. Let's do it together.
What you did to get here is nowhere near as important as what are you willing to do about it now.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm not worried about everything from your past, and that's the stigma that it has. But we can all look at, especially the last year that we had, mental health and addiction and stuff is coming now. It's going to be huge, man, because we're going to start a tidal wave of people that maybe didn't have a problem or as much of a problem. They just like to drink or take a few pills, but then, okay, you take away their community, their work, they're at home all the time, And they start to realize, you know, used to I could wait till 5 or 6 to have me a drink. Having it at 10 or 12, 11 o'clock now, you take away the meetings that I was going to, all of that stuff. So our one of the biggest callings that we have is to show that the face of addiction is changing from what most people perceive it to be.
Not the guy under the bridge. I mean, it's the people you work with. It's your doctors. It's your dentist. I mean, it's the kids in private school. I mean, you know, you just see it. It touches all socioeconomic statuses.
Well, at some point in time, we all got fixed on, instead of working stuff out and doing it the natural way, that there was a pill for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the second that mindset come around to, hey, like, I had ADD growing up or whatever, let's give him Ritalin instead of beating his ass and making him study.
Right.
Like, let's start pushing pills instead of fixing problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where this whole epidemic started, and then these monster pain pills. I'm lucky enough, the house I grew up in, I had to see them abused.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done them. Yeah. I can't even take extra strength Tylenol without getting a little sick or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've had surgeries for it, and the hydrocodones make me feel horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how some people take them and function.
Yeah. I used to say, I wish they made me sick.
Right? They made me sick, dude. I got my appendix cut out a couple years ago, and when I woke up from the anesthesia, it literally made me so sick. I threw up so hard that I busted every blood vessel in my eyes, and my eyes were bloodshot.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Good Lord knew what he was doing when he made me not like that.
So,
was there ever a breaking point with everything? Was there ever like a moment that you two can remember that it was like, this is it?
Oh, for sure. And it was 2013. So ironically, he's the same timeline as you were saying your sister 8 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was it. It kind of all came to a head in early 2013. I say that, you know, we were juggling all the plates and trying to keep it all together. And you can only do that for so long before it all comes crashing down. And so that was it for us. And so in that case, in this case, he had used some pills, and because the method with Brad would be, he would get clean and he'd do well for 7, 8, 9 months, and then he'd fall off the wagon again.
Yeah.
And that was just, like I said, for about 10 year span, that's how it was. And I could, by this point, you've begun to notice the signs, right? And the loved ones of addicts find themselves being like hyper alert, right? You're watching, like, or, you know, are they like falling asleep while they're sitting up? Are they sweating? Are they, you know, not being reliable? All those kinds of things. You learn the signs. And so that's where I was, super codependent, man. I was covering up and fixing up, you know, as much as I could, because this was something that, oh my gosh, this was 2013. Like, nobody can know about this, right? Nobody can know about this. So I'm fixing and covering up, and you really become almost addicted to the addict when you've been in it that long. You're addicted to the problem, and that's really what codependency is. And so that was me for sure. And this day, he was working for the family company in Gordon. We lived in Macon, and he was not home from work yet, and it was just odd because he was usually there by 5:30. I called him, and I could immediately tell something was wrong. His speech was slurred. He just had that sound. It wasn't quite right. So that's a 30-minute drive from Gordon to Macon. And so when I called him, he wasn't too far from our house, and I said, okay, I'm just going to stay on the phone with you till you get here. And only by the Lord's grace did he make that drive, right? There's no telling how many times he'd done it in the past, but that day I could witness it was bad. And so I was standing out in our front yard watching for him, and he comes down the road in his truck, and it's just, I mean, just looks like a wild man. He's swerving, and I see a lady that he's passing her, a small SUV, and she has to get over quickly. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he pulls in the driveway, like takes out half the bushes, right, that line our thing, and I'm like, oh my gosh. Well, then I realize the lady's coming back, and I'm like, oh God. So I run down. This is just a perfect picture of codependency. I run down, and I'm like, you do not get out of this truck. You stay in this truck. You know, I'm about to handle this. And so the lady was like, oh my gosh, is that your husband? He just about killed me. And I immediately said, yes, I'm sorry. He's been having seizures, which was true.
Yeah.
It was due to what he was abusing, but he had some. And I said, he's been having seizures, and I think that's what just happened. Calmed her down, got that situation taken care of. She left, and I went and got down him. And I'll never forget, I walked down the driveway, and I opened the door, and here's this grown man sitting in the driver's seat. All this chaos has just happened. He's eating, like, Sour Patch Kids. Just shoved them in his mouth.
That's the go-to.
Yeah. Sour Patch Kids. And so I was like, okay, come inside. You know, I got him inside. Our kids at the time were 4 and 7. Mm-hmm. So I got them situated, got him to the bedroom, shut the door, had a friend come and pick up the kids so I could figure out then what to do. So figured out, you know, what it was. And see, at this point, it wasn't even like hydrocodone. I mean, it was like some allergy medicine that allergists had prescribed, and he just taken too much of it. So it was like anything. That's when you know, like, it's out of hand,
so
right?
You were at the point where you were just taking what you could get your hands on.
Anything.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. And that, through going to treatment centers and getting out and stuff, you know, as people would either drug test me for something or mentally, it's like, okay, I know if I take pain pills, you know, then, you know, I'll get tested for them or whatever. So I would take something else. And I've been, you know, addicted into recovery from everything, you know, out there for the most part. And it had gotten to where at that point I was being prescribed something for like a sinus infection, you know, and I would just take the whole bottle within a day. Like, it didn't matter. It was anything that I say would give me a head change, like whatever I'm chasing and trying to, because
that would numb him, basically.
That would numb me, because I felt like inside, looking back now through what I've learned, you know, is I felt like such a failure, man, that, you know, I could never beat this. So anything that's going to change how I feel.
For me, I mean, like you said, I just finally had enough. And I think I realized at that point, I had felt like I could put up with a lot, but now I had these kids that I was in charge of. They were 4 and 7, and so they're growing. And so far, I've been able to cover it up, right, and hide it from them, what's going on. But I knew our oldest son, he's super intuitive, and so I just knew, you know, kids know. They're going to start picking up on something. So I thought, I have a job to protect them. And I was like, you know, we got to figure something out. You can't stay here. I don't know what we're going to do. And thankfully, a counselor we had been seeing for months at this point recommended a place called No Longer Bound, and it was a 10-month, now it's 12-month residential program. And so basically I said, you can go to this if you know, we're done, but if you want to see your kids or be in their lives at all, then you'll go and try to find
I want to give you a round
healing.
Of applause. That took some ball. I'm telling you that.
Yeah.
What you did is what I think so many people need to hear that right here. Even though still love that person,
mm-hmm.
you got to do what's best for them and you. And sometimes it's the worst thing that possibly that you can do.
I didn't want to suddenly be a single mom with a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old. Yeah. I worked a stressful job. I had to run the household, get them everywhere. So, yeah, it wasn't going to be a walk in the park for me, but it's what I knew I had to do. Because so far up until this point, he'd experienced no consequences, which I think is what kept him rolling.
So did you ever, throughout your addiction, ever have any run-ins with the law or anything like that, or did you dodge it for the most time?
I dodged it for the most part, yeah. And that is one of the things that hurt me from a small community, too.
That's what I was fixing to get to.
You know, you end up getting away with more than you should because of, you know, a family name or people know this or that. You know, so there were some consequences looking back that I didn't suffer that I probably should have and people would have, but I didn't.
The only thing, which that's, I'm glad you never got in trouble. Mm-hmm. I know people that have, like y'all do, but it ruins their life.
Yep.
I mean, it does. I'm very happy that you didn't.
Yeah.
But also in the same, like to reverse it, is I don't think that people, this is going to sound crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it when people are locked up and then they're forced into treatment, because I think it's just a waste of time most of the time.
Yeah. I totally agree.
I think that when somebody's ready to work on themselves, then they're ready. But until then, I don't like the being forced into it.
I mean, I agree with what you're saying. I am torn to a certain extent, because running a ministry and stuff, I know that the biggest thing is for me to at least get my hands on it and get them there and seeing what God can do with them through where we're at. Now, one of the ways that I word that is, what got you here is not nearly as important as what keeps you here. So the way Crossroads is set up and stuff is, like, we do have some people come who are court mandated to a certain extent. Nobody that's like avoiding hard time or anything like that can come. So it's through an interview process and who I bring in. But there are guys that I bring in under some of those conditions, and I know that within the matter of a month or two, this dude's either going to get with the program and do what we're doing, or he's going to go back to where he was at.
What are some of the things that I guess I don't know how to word this, that would make your program different or your approach to sobriety different than other programs?
What I learned through the program that I went through.
Well, tell them what was the turning point for you.
Let's do that first before we start talking about
your program. Like what was different? What made you stay at No Longer Bound? Because you could have left.
Yeah, and like I said, I was usually that guy who would say, I'll go get help. But this one was, when Jody came to me, you know, I was having seizures at the time and stuff, but the seizures were directly related to what I was taking. I was just being dishonest and lying and saying, I'm not doing anything. I'm just having seizures. And so we go to doctors.
Running up neuro bills over here.
Yeah, running up neurologists, you know, paying them because I'm not willing to be honest, ultimately. Still lying. But she loved me enough, like we said, to tell me, you got to go somewhere. I'm done, but you'll always be Lawson and Bella's dad. If you ever want to see them again, you'll go through this program that we were being told about. And man, you know, I went under the impression of, I was so convinced at that time, I was so full of crap and pride, and that I wouldn't even admit how much I loved her. Been high school sweethearts, but again, as men, what do we tell ourselves coming up? Like, we're tough, we're independent. Yeah.
We don't need anybody.
Yeah, I'll be fine without her. There's plenty of fish in the sea. You know, all those lies and that crap that I told myself. But those kids were a different story, man. And when she said, you know, if you ever want to see them again, that is what led me to the point of saying, all right, where do I sign up?
Where do I go? Thank you. That's one of the things that pissed me off so bad about my sister and other people is – the day my daughter was born changed the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I was a screw-up when I was younger. I got a DUI when I was 18, stole some stuff, got in trouble with the law a couple of times. But I say all the time that my daughter did what the state of Georgia never could, and that was make a man out of me. And I don't see how some people, your kids aren't the defining factor for you, that if you are screwing up, get your shit together for your kids, if nothing else. And my sister, for the longest time, I resented her about it because it's like you have these youngins, be what they need you to be.
Right.
And so, dude, that fact that was what turned it for you—that's a beautiful thing.
It is, man. You know, and for the longest time, you know, I love my kids, and people would say, "Do you love your kids?" And I'd say, "Yes," because I did. But if you looked at my actions did not show that I love my children. Because they were 7 and 4. But the reality is that I was hurting so much inside, trying to numb things and trying to keep up and keep appearance and all that stuff, that I didn't even know how to really love them and do what they needed to. Because just like with our children, you know, I want to put a smile on their face and I want them to be happy. My job as their dad was not to make them happy. It's to raise them and discipline them and teach them right from wrong and to love them no matter what. But what I was doing was trying to make them happy. So you go in the store.
He was the fun guy. He was the fun parent.
I'm the fun dad, you know, because I'm geeked up, right? You know, and go in the store. What candy you want? What's this and that? I don't know how to say no because I feel so bad about who I am inside. I can feel better about and the work. What I use is I was medicating on my children, so I'm making myself feel better based on their happiness. And if Daddy tells them no, they're going to be mad at me. Well, I already feel like a piece of crap inside. I'm doing drugs to, you know, make up for that. I don't want my children mad at me too, so I'm doing them a huge disservice by raising them that way. So when it got to the point where the crap hit the fan and she says, you got to go, it was like, you know, I want to see them. I don't want you to take my kids. I'll do what I need to do for them. So I went under the same impression. I'll do the song and dance. You know, I can, you know, I'm a rehab MVP, man. Y'all show me where to go and what to do. I'll perform. But I had no idea what God had in store for me. Man, and he busted me wide open.
Man, this is crazy. all week this week, that is what all of our shows have been about.
Really?
I swear. it has been insane. We started off this week with a buddy of mine from Nashville named Dustin Hare, and has a song that just came out, and it's called That's Me Again, Jesus, or It's Me Again, Jesus. And so we sat for here for an hour and a half the other night, and was just talking. And what led him down to write that song, where he came from, and all this other stuff. And I am just a firm believer that the good Lord, you might not be in the spot that you want to be in, but you're in the spot he wants you in.
Amen.
And there's somebody this week that is going to listen to one of these episodes. And whether it was a couple of us heathens sitting around on Monday talking about country music and God, or whether it was last night with two people that are huge on TikTok, both of them's like million plus. Okay. They started dating because of TikTok. Their relationship super strong because of the good Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And then y'all, there's somebody this, and then we're ending tomorrow with my buddy Matthew, who has cerebral palsy and is the most inspirational person that I mean, it's been a crazy week.
That's awesome.
But well, Brad,
keep going. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say his tagline that I love is that when he went to that program, he got freedom from drugs and alcohol, but he found freedom from so much more.
Yeah.
You know, like that was just the thing he was turning to. But man, and that's what's different about our program too, is that we look at the heart issue.
Yeah.
Right? Because to rehabilitate is to return to a former state. Well, with an addict, you don't want to do that.
No.
And so we got to dig a little deeper and find out what the heart issue is. And once you get to that and you find freedom from that, man, you don't want to use anymore.
I know. I am a firm believer in that. I think that things are broken, or they break because they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. They're broken, they don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people that always say, hey, I want to tear everything down and I want to build from the foundation. I'm not one of those people. I want to tear everything down, including the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to start from the lowest level possible.
Yeah.
And it's just weird. Like, if you're teaching to come from the heart and be comfortable with yourself and love yourself, that's awesome.
Yep. And that's what we do ultimately.
Well, let me just tell him, we have a joke at our house that me and the kids, that in 2013 he went to feeling school. So he got real in touch with it all. He was suddenly crying at the drop of a hat. And I mean, he still does that and we love it. But it's so funny because even the kids are like, when something's going on and they'll come to me and tell me and they're like, Mom, can we not tell Dad about this? Because he knows, you know, we're going to have
I'm a crybaby.
Yeah.
We're going to have to like talk it all out.
I am a crybaby. I've always been tenderhearted, but it seems like the older I get, I'm 33, the older I get, the more that just the little things now. Mm-hmm. But I think it's because I'm starting to see what everybody else defines as beauty in this world, I'm starting to find my own beauty in this mm-hmm. world. And like, even just being around little girls playing softball.
Yeah.
I mean, it's little stuff that'll just catch you sometimes.
Yes.
And then I've just got tear.
Yeah, it will. And kids will do that to us too. Yeah. But, you know, I grew up as the tenderhearted, kind-hearted kid. But I was scared to death that somebody was going to pick on me for it. They're going to make fun of me. They're going to realize just how sensitive I am. So I tried to act tough. And you can only keep that act up for so long. And so ultimately I needed drugs and alcohol to help me act the way that I felt like I needed to act in order to gain people's acceptance or to keep them from really knowing me. Because again, inside, I don't feel good enough because I can never measure up to the performance level of what God expects and all the crap that I had inside of me. So what I teach today is I'm free. I am freed up. F-R-E-E-D-U-P. I'm freed up.
And we have t-shirts. We'll send you one.
Yeah.
Please.
Hashtag freedom.
I'll give y'all something. I am
free to be who I was created to be. You know, like I spent so long, for example, you know, if a song comes on and you want to dance, but you won't because you're looking beside you and you're worried about what somebody else is going to think. We're just adult versions of that. Like I may like this and you know, like what kind of music do you listen to? I'd say, well, I listen to everything. The problem with that is I lost me. I didn't know what I liked because I liked whoever I was around, what they liked. And today I'm free, man. I'm free to be who I was created to be. I'm fine just the way God created me. And there are so many people who are either listening to this or out there wondering, and you never feel comfortable in your own skin. You could be in a crowd and feel completely alone. And what I want people to know is you're not.
You're not.
You were created just the way you are for a purpose. Now, you may not have found that purpose yet, but I promise you it's there. And I promise you that through everything I've been through, I believe that God sees a bigger picture. That take when my dad died or when other things happened to me, and I could look just at that instance and not figure out how this is going to look one day. How does it make sense? But today I trust that one day it will. He sees a bigger picture, and he can use that for his glory, man, to make us who we are, because I would not be here today. I wouldn't have a relationship with my heavenly father that I have if I hadn't have lost my earthly father. Yep. I do believe that, well, that because I was, you know, and if she hadn't have loved me the way she did, I wouldn't be here, period, sitting here having this conversation and telling people that no matter how ugly it is right now, it can be beautiful one day.
See, I'm one of those that what you just say it way better than I do. I say the same thing. It's even when times are tough and things are just, you know, just horrible falling down around you and everything, do it with a smile on your face. Because if you sulk, if you get down, if you let your depression eat you alive or addiction, you know, it's just going to get worse. But if you know something's going to be bad and you remain positive about it, see, I think everybody is pushed by the good Lord. If you don't believe in God, then you believe in the universe or whatever. Yeah. But I believe that everybody is pushed to their breaking point. Mm-hmm. And the people that receive blessings are the ones that got to their breaking point and didn't give in. Mm-hmm. That you had to struggle, that you had to go through that hell to receive your blessing. And the people like y'all, I mean, that sucks at everything you've been through. But if you would have just KO'd at any point in time and say, I'm done, I'm just going to be worthless the rest of my life, you wouldn't be in the position you're in now. You had to go through your struggle to be where you're at now.
Yep.
Absolutely. Definitely. And you know, I mean, our marriage wouldn't be what it is today without all that struggle. Crossroads wouldn't even exist, you know, without all that struggle. And so that's what I always think is so cool is that I say, you know, when I dropped him off that day, February 21st, 2013, I was done. Like, I was driving back to Macon and I was going to find a divorce attorney. Like, that was it. And a wise friend said to me, like, listen, don't make any major decision right now. Like, you don't have to do anything right now. Like, the chaos has been removed. He's safe. You know, just focus on you and the kids. So, thankfully, I took that advice. I sought wise counsel. I had a great counselor. Do not undermine the worth of a good counselor or therapist. So, that was huge. You know, I met with my pastor. I had lots of mentors and that sort of thing. And I just spent a lot of time on
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
My knees praying, and God answered in such a big way. Like, I just, in the beginning, so it was zero contact period when he dropped him, when I dropped him off. They told me it would be 60 to 90 days. Well, 90 days came and went. I hadn't heard anything. And this program, you know, tells you nothing. Like, that's part of the program. It's made to work on the family members just like it's working on the man. And so they said, we'll call you when he can have visits. Well, finally, I guess by March, end of March, beginning of April, I had reached the point where I at least wanted to go visit. In the beginning, I didn't have any intention of even going to visit. But I'd kind of reached the point where I wanted to visit. And so at that moment, I began praying and had all my prayer warriors praying with me that God would just reveal to me, he would give me wisdom, that he would give me discernment, and that I would know from the very first time I laid eyes on Brad that God was doing a work and calling me to stay. And so we're all praying that prayer. Finally, early June, the call comes. It had been 107 days since I'd seen him. And again, God in the details, I think each of us needed every one of those 107 days. And when I went to that visit, I'll never forget that day. It's so clear in my mind, like, you know, driving up, I planning my outfit, what I was going to wear, like it's anticipation, you know, of seeing this person that he hadn't seen in such a long time. And I drive up, not really knowing where to go, get out of the car. I see all these men kind of standing around. And then Brad starts walking towards me, and there are tears streaming down his face. And God answered that prayer so big in that moment, because I literally knew that first moment I laid eyes on him that God was doing work. He was doing something. He was doing something. And God told me that he was calling me to stay. And not even just for our own little family of four, but there was something bigger. And I had no idea what that was at the time, but I knew it was going to take both of us. And God was calling me to stay. And so that day was the sweetest, one of the sweetest days of my life, like just that visit, because his eyes were clear and his conversation was clear. And, you know, we just enjoyed one another like we had before the addiction. And so, so I knew in that moment. And then God's time, and even in all that, that was summertime. So guess what? The kids, we got to visit him all summer. And, you know, it's true that kids are super resilient because they thought it was great. You know, I live at home with mom during the week. We go see dad on the weekends. We got to stay at a hotel. You know, like, it was all great. And, and then God just continued to work in that. And so not only did he regenerate Brad, but he completely restored our marriage and our family. And so I always say he worked on me just as hard as
do y'all think you're stronger now than you were when you said I do?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, we were babies when we said I do. No, like, yeah, dreaming about the picket fence and the dogs and the kids. And I mean, I had no idea. I look back now and I think, God, I was looking down at me like, girl,
you don't know what
you're getting into. But what I'll tell you what I learned through that was that God wants us to pray like big, bold prayers. I always say that I was praying these little timid prayers when he was in rehab, like, God, just get him sober, just get him sober. And God, now I know, is probably looking down on me going, is that all you want? Because I have so much more. Like, I'm going to make him this incredible man, and he's going to lead so many people. Like, I really can't describe the impact he has on people today.
I don't know. I'm telling you. it is very seldom that I don't know what to say, that I'm at a loss of words. But y'all are just in so many ways an inspiration. And the marriage thing, I'm going to touch on that. The reason I asked that question is there's so many people that give up nowadays.
Yeah.
And there's so many people that when those rough seas come along, that they jump ship real quick. Like, there's a reason why you don't. Like, I understand now more than ever, and I've never been married. Like, I'm a broke record when I say this, but I'm a helpless romantic. I want what my grandparents had. Mm-hmm. I want, even when times get bad, that's your person. Mm-hmm. You buckle up and you ride that damn road with them.
Right.
And there's so many people now that if it just gets sideways, they're done. And the fact that your marriage is stronger now after addiction and after that hard road that you went on than before when there was no problem, that is a testament to why you stay together and why you keep pushing, and why the older couples, why they didn't believe in divorce.
Yep.
Yeah.
They went through it, man. And they were willing to go through it.
Yeah, I know a lot of people get put down where you get older folks in the church or whatever, and they're like, well, you're not ever supposed to get divorced or whatever. I don't think that's what they meant.
No.
I think they meant you're supposed to go through the trials together.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I mean, because there are some cases, I mean, abuse, things like that.
Oh, yeah,
dip out
on abuse.
you're going to get divorced. But, I mean, I think, you know, through the hard stuff, man, that's where the growth happens. Yeah. That's when Jesus is refining us and pruning us and, you know, making us who he wants us to be. Because without that, I mean, I honestly sometimes feel sorry for people that kind of have this cakewalk of a life because they never get to that desperation.
We are forged by fire.
Yep.
And those are like, Jesus. When I listen to, you know, your podcast and stuff, and you hear the warrior mentality, like that is what I have and how we connect in that way. Because, you know, I love, like, I mean, like most, you know, you got Navy SEALs and fighting and, you know, and I don't grab those, you know, weapons and put on that each day. But I'm grabbing spiritual weapons and tools, and I'm a warrior for Christ. That's how I look at it in my own eyes, because I'm fighting for him. And I'll say, you know, for Jody to say like that I'm a great man or however you word it and stuff, like, I don't feel that way.
He always says I'm nothing special, and I have to disagree. He says he's nothing special.
You are too.
And I always say I have to disagree with you.
I'm not. I'm just a humble dude that went through some crap that was broken, and I turned to the Lord to be. I can't do it because if I could,
and I couldn't
never
do what I did
to the point
without his strength. Yeah.
I tell you a crazy story. The day I was fired in country radio, it was my birthday, September the 10th. The last thing I said on radio was, God does not, it's insane that it's the last thing I said, but it was God's plan. Yeah. Let me know that, hey, we fixing to go through some hell, but I got you, son.
I use those kind of situations as a miraculous firing.
And that's what this was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I get fired, but one of the last things I said is what I told y'all a while ago. Yeah. You're not where you want to be, you're where what God wants you to be. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting in the tattoo chair, and I have wanted this tattoo that it's working on right now forever. It's God's armor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got chinks in it. It's got cracks in it, all this stuff. I am literally getting the first part of this tattoo when they call me to tell me I'm fired.
Mm.
Literally getting the first part of God's armor tattooed
That's
on
crazy.
Me when they call me to tell me I'm fired from my dream job.
Yeah.
I almost cried, not because I got fired, because I realized right then that I was not where he wanted me to be.
Yeah.
And he had something planned so much better for me that I'm sitting there getting tattooed his armor to protect me.
And that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Why would you need that armor?
Yeah.
Cause you know, like, yeah, you don't, exactly. You wear armor when you're coming under attack.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so
yeah.
Lord, this is why I've got it. And he put you in a situation as to, this is why you
that,
need it.
That right there worked on my faith, which I've been a Christian for a long time. Not an example setter, as I say. But I am a Christian.
Yeah.
But I believe folks like you're way better at this than me, but I end up having conversations with God about God all the time. But we were supposed to go through those so we can witness and talk to people that wouldn't come up to just a preacher, because some folks are going to be ashamed.
Right.
Some folks are going to be ashamed to say, hey, I used to use this or I used to do that. But folks like us, and it's one of the things I take the most pride in the world in, is they're not intimidated by us.
Mm-hmm.
They see us as them. They're looking in a mirror. And maybe that's why I can always say whatever pain I've been through that I knew I had a purpose behind it.
Yep.
Was because I can have that relationship with people and then explain to them my relationship with God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amen. And that's for us. That's how I am. Like, there's nobody that I can look at. One of the things that I don't do is go into a lot of detail about how much I used or what I used or how bad things got. But I can tell you, her sitting there today, brother, it was ugly.
Yeah.
It was bad. Mm-hmm. You know, she's been through so much more. And for me to sit here today, and one of Crossroads is also different in ways that, you know, I believe that we all have scars, which I call emotional scars and pain, things that we've done to others, things that have been done to us. What I do is take scars of guys and start poking on them. Which one's infected? Okay, this person died, or you did this, or you cheated on her and lost this. Like, so when I hit it and they draw back, it's like, okay, that's the one we need to dig into.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's hurting you. There's a reason you're doing what you're doing. See, I thought for the longest time, too, it's like, it's just me. I'm just carrying on a family tradition, right? Like, no, that was crap. I was using for a reason.
Yeah.
When I start looking today, what was the root cause of the issue? Why am I doing what I'm doing? And I would go to rehabs in the past, and the verbiage that we use and one of the things that I say is, well, you know, if I take an apple tree and it's producing fruit, right, it's producing apples. Well, I take that tree and we cut off all the branches, and this is one thing that No Longer Bound taught me and the guys who are up there. Well, if I cut off all the branches, if the tree doesn't die, eventually what's going to happen? The branches are going to grow back. What's it going to produce? Apples. If I just bring a guy in and keep him sober for a certain amount of time and we do make a few changes, but I don't get to the root cause of the issue, replant it so that the root grows down and we have different fruit. Otherwise, he's going to bear the same fruit that he's always bore. You know, I would hear in church, well, you can only reap what you sow. I didn't know how to sow anything worth reaping. You know, like, it's like, well, if you plant corn, you're going to get corn. Well, I was, you know, I mean, I didn't know how to plant anything. And today I learned, how do I plant something that's worth reaping? And one of the biggest things that I can say to teach people is, I've been hearing a lot lately, is just to be consistent.
Yes.
The consistency will add up. You know, we go so up and down. You know, like, I'll do it for a little while and then I'll quit. And also, like, the whole biblical scholar and all of that, like, we back away from it because I can never understand it. And I would tell people, it ain't about how much you do. It's just being consistent and doing something each day, man. And that consistency will compound. And before you know it, you look back and, you know, you've been pretty consistent for a while. And that's what I do, man. It's one day at a time and looking back and just trying to let the Lord use me and use my story, because I'm broken to the point where he put it all back together beautifully and still works on me. I don't feel like anything special. And the reason is, because I know I'm not doing anything that anybody else can't do. Man.
Oh, you're doing something that a lot of people can't
well,
do.
Well, to the point.
Right, thank you.
I'm about to throw it. I'm going to pick up the closest damn thing to me and throw it at your head.
Thank you. I know, right?
I just think that, man, for me, it's just, it's allowing him to be enough in my life and use me.
I want to tell that story.
I think that any guy can walk this out.
Before you tell that, I want to tell you something. It is harder to be a warrior for God than it is to be a preacher.
Mm. Yeah, I've never thought about that.
It is harder for us to live and go through the things that we have been through and still talk about our faith because we look like two people that shouldn't have faith.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We look like two people that when we open our mouths that the love of God shouldn't come out of it.
Yeah.
I promise you, the people see me on social media all the time, and the last thing they want to hear from me is that. But it's easy for somebody that's went down a very clean-cut road in their life to talk about how God's been good to them because they never had to struggle.
Yeah,
it is harder for you to do what you do, and I hope you take.
Thank you. I think that God's just put blinders on me, like I don't see it.
It's miraculous what he does day in and day out and how just all the people he's been able to affect. Not only leading our little family of four well, but leading the ministry and all the men that have come through and the families. I mean, his phone rings nonstop. Well, now mine does because he made my number on the website. But everybody's, people are calling all the time. But I think one of the things we learned along the way was in a sermon that we heard, and it was Jensen Franklin. I love a Pentecostal preacher because, they're just spirit-led and they're going to say what comes up. And he said, whatever you're going through, you were built for this storm. Like God knew.
He doesn't put more on your plate.
No, he knew you were going to face this, and so he has equipped you, and he's going to be there, beside you to walk through it.
Can I explain?
I want to tell that story, but go ahead. About it being a...
Tell it.
Okay, so...
I'm excited. The way y'all are looking at each other.
I will say, the comment you made, he doesn't put more on your plate than you can handle. I disagree with that to a certain extent, because... I think for me, he put more on my plate than I could handle because I wouldn't have turned to other people or turned to him to say, hey, boy,
I can get you through it. The bottom line is
we can get through anything, but you don't have to go through it by yourself. Yeah. And a lot of times we get caught up in that. Well, he won't put more on me than I can handle. That means I can do anything. No, I can screw it up is what I can do. So anything anyone's going through, you turn to him and people in your life who are standing there. That's one of the biggest things, too. We've got people trying to help us, but we don't. We think, I can get through this.
Most folks are too ashamed or too embarrassed to ask for help.
Pride.
And I deal with this a lot when it comes to talking to people about mental health.
Yeah.
First time I put my story out there about trying to commit suicide in 2010, I put it on social media.
Mm-hmm.
I was scared to death of it for so long about opening up, but I knew it was something I had to get off my back because when you're dealing with depression like I deal with, you walk into a room, you think everybody's talking about you, and literally no one gives a shit about you.
Yep.
Like, no one is concerned with you whatsoever, but your brain is playing
tricks. But it's real in your mind.
Yeah, it's playing tricks on you. So I decided when I wanted to start, I never ever took medication for it. I wanted to fix it through learning how to control it instead of medicating And I put on social media my story because I knew I had to because I wanted the monkey off my back. So many people reached out to me and made me feel like I was never alone in the first place. So if anybody's listening that's dealing with an addiction problem or mental health issue or anything like that, if you are open and you're honest about it, there will be no criticism. There will be nothing but support.
Yeah,
and if somebody does criticize you, more than likely they're going through the same problem.
They got bigger problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's true.
Yep.
Okay, so the story, I feel like we've hyped it up and it's not going to be as good now.
It will be. I guarantee it will be.
No, the cool thing is that God taught both of us the same lesson, even though we were on very different sides of the storm. You have Brad, who was kind of, plucked out of his home and sent away to this program. And he didn't know what was going to happen, if I was going to go, if I was going to stay, or anything. He didn't know what was going on. And God clearly said to him, he wrote this in his journal, and this is how we learned that he was teaching us the same thing, is by comparing our journals when he came home. And so in his journal, he wrote where God was clearly teaching him, like, well, what if she leaves? What if she leaves and takes the kids and you don't see them again? Then what? What are you going to do then? Are you going to turn back to drugs and keep using and living that life? Or are you going to surrender and let me be enough in your life? And so for me...
Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happened when people messaged me during the show.
And so for me, I was on the other side of that coin. I was at home. My husband was missing all of a sudden. I'm trying to come up with a story for everybody. I'm raising the kids, doing all the things. And God looked down at me and said, what about you? what are you going to do? Are you going to get mad and resentful and angry? Are you going to surrender and trust me and let me be enough? And thankfully, in his strength, we were both able to let him be enough. And so that's the big lesson that he taught both of us. It's written in his journal from 2013. It's written in my journal from 2013. And that's just so cool to me that God is in the details like that,
to teach us the same thing. What God was teaching me is, you know, I had struggled my whole life feeling like I had a void inside of me and a hole that was empty. And I'm trying to fill it with anything this world has to offer, man. Money, drugs, sex, you name it. We're going to at least look happy on the outside, absolutely miserable on the inside.
Yep.
You could have blessed me with so much and said, hey, you just won the lottery. Here's, you know, however many millions of dollars. But if you didn't have drugs to go along with it, I wouldn't be happy. I didn't care. So how do I think I can be happy in any other situation? So I get there and it's like, okay, Brad, what if she does leave? What if she takes those kids? And you came here to have a keep your relationship with them, but what if you don't? Are you going to stay? Are you going to pack your bags up and leave? If you get a phone call and she's done listening to everybody else and said he'll never change and she's done, and matter of fact, the kids are gone too. And I just knew inside, man, I was tired. I was tired of doing what I was doing. And I said, you know what? If God can be enough in my life, which I doubted because at the time I was my own God and thought I was even, you know, nobody could take away the anger and everything I had inside of me. But I said, if this one doesn't work, meaning this program, it's not going to be because I didn't give it my best effort. I'm going to give it everything I got. Like if my kids were 40 years old and they look back at me and said, Daddy, remember that summer you were gone? Like, we are so glad, you know, you did this and Daddy, you focus on you. That's kind of mentally the kind of stuff I had to tell myself is what would I do for them down the road versus right now? Because every bit of me was saying, I want to leave this program and go take care of them. I love them. They need me to protect them. The bottom line was I had the opportunity and I wasn't doing it. So I might as well stay where I'm at and allow God to get to where he can be enough in my life. Because guess what? People are going to die. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are going to hurt your feelings. Like, things are going to happen. And I've heard it said, you know, the only reward for overcoming a challenge is the next challenge. Like, you don't get, like, okay, I got past this one, now what? You know, like, it's always what's coming next. And she hit on Jensen Franklin and saying, you were built for this. And the other thing that God put on my heart and I use is, you know, I have a saying where I'm like, some ships were built for smooth sailing, and we ain't one of them.
No, we're not.
Like, you talk about a warrior and guy, like, you know, you may see, a big battleship or something out there that the storm's calm right now, but we're not a catamaran cruise, right? Like, we're not made for smooth sailing. We were built for storms, but we can go through them, and that's the biggest thing, too. You know, when it comes to depression and the things that we've hit on, you know, that was me inside. But I was trying to kill myself through drugs and using. Like, I had a death wish, but it's like, oh, I can use so much, and if I die, I die. And I'm not going to, I'm not going to do it.
Well, a lot of people don't understand the difference when what you're going through, or what you was going through and what I was going through. It's not that you want to die, you're tired of living.
Yes, there you go. Great way of putting it.
It's like, you're just so fed up, and it seems like nothing's ever going to change. You don't want to leave your friends and family, but at the same time, you're just like, this sucks. I don't know if I can do it. And that's where I got to.
Yeah, and we're so convinced, like you said, one of the biggest things is nobody wants to hear what I have to say, or I'm not going to say it because of the stigma or this and that. But just like we talked about, we hit on earlier, being kind-hearted guys or sensitive, like I might cry or something, and I'm not going to share my story or speak up or cry because I'm worried of what other people think. But if you ever do, you start to realize you had it backwards.
Yeah. I literally, me and the musician buddy that's at my house right now sleeping, we went on a road trip about a month ago. We went to New Orleans, Houston, Fort Worth, and we ended up in Nashville. We both were struggling with some stuff when we left. We stopped on the way to New Orleans when I picked him up from the airport at Hank Williams Sr.'s grave. It was something we both always wanted to go to or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We make it all the way to Nashville. Been to all these places, 7 days of drinking and fun and just having a blast, right? Yeah. We get absolutely, and I know this is bad to say with y'all sitting here, we overindulged as much as possible in Jim Beam that last night. But we got in our fields that last night, and it was just me and him, and we was watching the sun come up in Nashville. And we had both, like, came right back around to what we wanted out of life. There were some heartbreaks that had happened to both of us, and we were trying to realign ourselves. It's one reason why we went on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
We started to go to bed, and we looked at a poster that had been there for 2 days that we had not seen. It was a Hank Williams Sr. poster in our Airbnb the last night. And simultaneously, we both about, well, we did break down crying. But we knew what we were seeing because we had just got done talking about, and I know some people get on my butt about this. Sometimes I get drunk and talk about God. Uh-huh. Or worse is I get drunk and talk to God and thinks he talks back sometimes through music. Yeah. But we see it. Like mm-hmm. I got to see it, and it was affirmation that you got to get back to having people like you on the show. Like mm-hmm. you're having a good time and you're having fun, but look, this is a little reminder. You know, some of that other stuff might sell and you might make some money off of it. But remember, you've always said morals over money.
Mm-hmm.
And so this whole week, this is my post on Monday was I'm getting back to full schedule this week and all this stuff. And every show has led right back to a conversation like this. And I'm just pumped. I was pissed before y'all got here. Super mad. I was over there telling people off on TikTok.
Yeah.
There's a situation where one of my friends is in an abusive relationship.
Mm.
And I've been stood up for a couple times to the point where I put my hands on old dude because I will not stand
a man
putting his hands on a woman.
No, sir.
Just been kind of pissy about it the way it's been going. And, like, y'all coming in here reset me. If you would have looked at my TikTok live an hour and 10 minutes ago, I was big mad.
Yeah.
And, hey, that was a reminder to me. Y'all come in here, y'all reset me because I'm reminded why I'm doing this.
Man.
Yeah. Well, Brad, like Brad's saying, his mindset when he was in the program was like, you know, all right, I'm going to dig in this time. If it fails, it's not going to be because of me. I had the same mindset. Like, my marriage is not going to fail because of something I didn't do. You know, I'm going to check all the boxes, do everything I can do. Ultimately, have to surrender him to Jesus and let Jesus change his heart. But that was a big deal for a control freak like me to like lay it all down but still do my part. You know, I'm going to go to Al-Anon. I'm going to do all these things. Because if it fails, it's not going to be on me.
Yeah. So. And I think also one of the things that is looking in here and saying, okay, like the kind of week you've had and whatever, and me talking about not being a preacher and doing the things that I do and being a warrior for Christ and everything, man, is I feel like we get it wrong so many times, like I hit on earlier, you know, looking at like people drinking and stuff like that, like we're not judging anyone, period. Like I don't think any differently of people that do. Now, obviously, if there's consequences to your life you're suffering based on the choices you're making, I'm like, hey, how's that working out for you? Because for me, it didn't.
Yeah.
But most of the people, like I've heard it said, you know, like, well, what does God think about this alcohol or this and that? Like, I've learned, man, I don't think he's concerned about that.
Mm-mm.
I think he's concerned with you.
Thank you.
In a relationship with you.
Yeah.
Period. And so for me, it's complete abstinence away from all of that stuff because I know how that affects my life and the choices that I make and my relationship with him. Now, I draw closer to him, other things clear up.
Yeah.
He is not concerned about those. But everybody else is.
Yeah, that is my whole thing right now. And I told y'all before we started this, I don't believe in organized religion anymore. Mm-hmm. It has made me so mad the way it has treated certain people. And I go back to a couple of different things in the Bible, and I believe everybody interprets different passages. You get to see it how you want to see it or whatever.
Yeah.
But I always go back to this, and it's love thy neighbor, that Jesus died for every one of us. He didn't die for some of us. He died for every one of us. It's not my job to bring you to the Lord. It's my job to tell you how he's worked in my life. Now, if you want to go to the Lord, you can go to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you don't. But I'm not going to treat you any different if you don't have that same road that I'm on.
Right.
And there are so many churches and there are so many people that say that they're Christians.
Mm-hmm.
That the second they would have looked at you 10 years ago or the way they might look at me now, they're going to turn their back on us and they're going to say, I'm going to pray for you.
Mm-hmm.
What do I ever do to help you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's my problem. And that's why I love people like you and what you're doing and what y'all are doing. Is because you're not just saying it.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is it's so beautiful. You've brought it full circle. You've took what a lot of people can't do. They want to just be mad as hell at God, and they want to say, hey, you put me through this hell, I'm done with you. I'm just going to live the rest of my life or whatever. But you made the conscious decision, or God knocked you down to where you didn't have another choice, is the way I like to put it. I'm hard-headed. I have to learn lessons the hard way.
We got
to
take them behind the woods.
But you took something that would have destroyed most people, and you realized that it was for a purpose. It was for a reason. And you were like, all right, you know, you took me through this first journey. Let's go to the next.
Yep.
A lot of people can't do that, dude.
Surrender. I mean, it's true surrender to him.
A lot of people can't do that.
I think they can.
They should. There's a difference.
Yeah. Right.
They should, but they're too hard-headed, and they're too scared.
We're not willing to surrender, man. You know, that's one of the biggest things, too, is to admit that I can't do it by myself. Yeah. I can't get to the point to where, like, for me, it's also just looking back and saying, and just being real enough to be like, well, how's that working out for me?
Yep.
You know, like, I don't have to carry this anger that I'm keeping inside of me. But if I do ever want to actually be there for those kids or have any kind of relationship with a wife or do the things that I'm doing, then I might want to put it down because it ain't been working out too good for me up until this point.
See, I believe wholeheartedly when I say this, and y'all probably going to throw something at me when I say it, I believe that people like y'all need the platform that like Joel Osteen has, and he needs the platform that you have. It needs to be reversed.
Yeah.
There would be many more people that I'm telling you, there will be so many more people that maybe at the end of the day they don't become a Christian, but y'all are setting the right example of what a Christian is to where I can sit here and talk about drinking.
Yeah.
And I don't feel judged and y'all teach sobriety.
Yeah.
That is what you're supposed to be like.
Well, and like I said in starting out, like I think that if Jesus were here today, he would tell a lot of people you're getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Because that's what he came under fire for too, was sitting around the table with people that the Pharisees and the higher ups were like, hold on now, what are you doing? And he said, I'm not worried about what's on the outside of the cup. Yep. It's the inside that matters. And the world tells us to judge it by the outside. And as long as everything looks good, then it is good. That's crap.
That's super crap.
For me, it was because like I thought I was. I convinced myself that I'm okay because everything looked fine. And man, there's so many people walking around who are absolutely miserable, but it looks okay on the outside, so they don't get the help that they need. And the other thing that I want people to hear is like in Jody's statement and what she said about like we led into loving me enough to tell me I've got to go somewhere. I'm done. You got to choose. That's what she made me do is choose. You see what I'm saying? You can't have your cake and eat it too. And oftentimes men have to be forced into a position. I say men because we deal
hard-headed. We're hard-headed.
You got to choose. Now, the bottom line is sometimes they make the wrong choice and they go down that road, but you hold the line. You do not compromise and say, if you don't do this, I'm going to do this. But then we kind of move that line back some. Choose that line, take a stance, and make them pick one way or the other.
You figured out what your journey is.
Yeah.
You figured out your purpose. So what you're saying, like hold the line and everything, you know where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, a lot of people give me hell because they'll get on to me about talking trash one day, then having these the next day. But guess what? There are people that sit there and they listen to me talk trash and they're entertained. And then they'll listen to this show the next day. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they find themselves talking to God.
That's how God's using you.
Yeah, that's how he's using me. And if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't do this.
Yeah. And I'll sit here and say, like, there are probably people when you say you come under fire, hear stuff and everything, you know, like back in December when we first talked.
Yeah.
You know, I'd listen to podcasts or hear stuff and you hear some GDs and F-bombs drop.
Yeah, I got to watch the G. I don't mean to, but I always say it.
But I'm just saying, like, if I take a stance of like, I can't be on that kind of podcast or I can't talk, you know, but it's like, no, Brad, you're not any better than anyone else. Go sit down, let's talk and have an open, honest discussion. And, you know, that's what it's about for me.
That's exactly what it should be about for everybody.
Otherwise, if not, then like you know, you talk about some of the other preachers and stuff. It's like we view God as an ATM machine.
Yep.
Like I can act a certain way and be good enough, and then you give me this. Or if I'm good, I'll get this. And we're not promised anything.
Exactly.
But the deal is you can be okay no matter what happens to you. And whatever you're going through, you can have peace in this storm because you turn to Him, not to you.
Well, in our stories, what God has done for each of us, like that's the most powerful thing. Absolutely. You're going to win more people to Christ by sharing that, because nobody can take that away or argue with your experience.
Well, it goes back down to the road you travel to me. Mm-hmm. Is the people that are listening to me are probably some degenerates like me. There's some heathens like me. Yeah. I mean, they are. I know who's listening to this show right now. Yeah. And I love each and every one of y'all. Yeah. But if they can, but my thing is I don't want, and this is, it's going to sound crazy. I don't want people that consider themselves saints or perfect. I don't want them listening to me. Mm-mm. I don't like those people most of the time anyway. I know it's ugly. I love them because I'm supposed to love them.
Right.
But the people that are listening to me are supposed to be listening to me for a reason. Mm-hmm. And it's my job to entertain, but to bring it back to stuff like this. And if you were not the way you were, then you wouldn't help people the way you do. And that's what it just boils down to for me. You have to be true to yourself. You cannot go wrong in this life if you are true to yourself.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Amen. Mm-hmm. You can't. And I mean, that's what we stand on, man. And what I look at is treating everybody the same way. Nobody's any better than anyone else. And we just try to be real, you know, through what we've been through. And for our relationship, you know, is everything perfect and stuff? No, it never is. You know, but at the end of the day, we communicate with one another. We know that we love each other. We come together and try to make the best decisions for our ministry and our children and everything else, and are open and honest about what we've been through. And that's the heart that I have, is just to come alongside men or families who think they'll never change or there is no hope. And I'm here to tell you, yeah, there is too.
I want to end the show today a completely different way than I've ever done it, but I feel like it's on my heart for you to do this. Mm-hmm. I want you, and like I said, never done this before. I hope you feel comfortable doing it. I'd like for you to say a prayer as we end this today, and hopefully somebody that's listening will need it.
All right.
You go right ahead.
Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day, God, and just thank you for this opportunity, Lord. I just want to completely give you all the credit, all the honor and glory, Lord, for all you have done in my own life, Lord. And I just want to pray specifically for anybody who is listening to this, God, for anyone who heard something, Lord, that maybe touched them. May they understand that it's not about Brad or Jody or Crossroads or anything else, Lord, that it is about you, God. And may you work on our hearts, God. May you touch them and show them that no matter what they're going through, God, they can get through it. That we were created for this, Lord. We were made just the way you want us to be. God, we are beautifully and wonderfully made. And we compare ourselves to everyone else and think that other people are better or they look better or their actions are better and all of that stuff, Lord. And it just makes us miserable. And I just pray that everyone will just surrender today to you, God, and have the peace that you give us that passes all understanding. Lord, and any man who's listening to this who may be struggling with getting help or letting his family down or feeling like a failure, I just pray that you help him to realize that the best thing he can do for his family and for himself is to get help or to make decisions based on what we want the outcome to be long term, not right now. God, and I just thank you for the opportunity, Lord. I pray that you bless this podcast, Lord. I pray that you help people flood to it, to listen to it, Lord. Not just mine, but Josh's in general. Lord, that you just help it grow, God, to reach other people, to show love. God, love for one another, love just for humanity, and that my job isn't to change anyone else's mind and that we can disagree and still get along, God, because we're not looking at each other's actions because you're not nearly as concerned with what most of us think we're doing that's wrong or bad and stuff. God, you just love us and want a relationship with us. So I pray that we're all willing to do that today. God, we love you and praise you and thank you for the opportunity. In Jesus' name. Amen.
If that don't make you cry and that don't touch your heart, folks, don't listen to the show again. Tell them where Crossroads Ministry is, and then we're getting out of here.
So Crossroads is located in Macon. We currently have two houses. It's Crossroads. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook, Crossroads Recovery Ministries, Inc. And we have two houses located in Macon, Georgia. Our website is crossroadsrecovery.org, and all the info is there. Admissions, the program, phone numbers, websites, the whole thing.
So thank y'all for coming. Man. And if y'all, if you're needing help right now, please contact these folks.
Please do.
Thank y'all for listening to Politics, Religion, and Whiskey. We'll catch you next time.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.